You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to my last guest, Kyle Ross of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Folks, if you need to find a food pantry near you, you can go to foodfinder.us. That is foodfinder.us. You just plunk in your zip code, and it will direct you to food pantries near you. In case anybody you know, and I guarantee you there are people that you know that are very concerned about their SNAP benefits. Right now, I have been very much looking forward to having this discussion with Dr. Craig Spencer. He's an associate professor on the practice of health services, policy and practice at the Brown University School of Public Health. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Craig. It's such an important discussion. We will have you back to talk about public health, what it is and what it isn't, and why misinformation is a problem. But you were interviewed by the Daily Beast a few weeks ago. And I have looked at it just in my own, trying to remain a well-versed person, especially doing what I do now. Yeah. I have spent some time looking at the history of eugenics in the United States. It's modeling by the Nazi movement, the Third Reich in Germany, and some of the echoes that we hear today in the rhetoric, but also in the policy objectives coming out of the Trump administration. You spoke about this on the record very clearly to the Daily Beast. Help people understand. Let's just set the table. Tell us a little bit about the catalyst for the eugenics movement in the United States and how it was deployed to basically come up with a race-based class system here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on this. I've been talking a lot about this. This was not what I thought I would be chatting the most on when I started teaching on the history of public health. I thought it was going to be the boring stuff. But the more I learned about eugenics, the more I realized it was unfolding in front of us every single day, particularly over the past, you know, 7 or 8 months. But let me situate us. And again, thank you, Maggie, for having me on to chat about this. When we talk about eugenics today, well, we just don't talk about eugenics, right? If anybody knows about it, they know that it was probably bad. And I hear pseudoscience, and I hear that it was part of the Nazis. And that's something that we don't do. But the problem is that overlooks the fact that 100 years ago, the overwhelming majority of Americans not only knew about eugenics, but were strong adherents to its practices, including in medicine, including in public health, including in law on the Supreme Court, and we'll talk about that. But let's go a little bit further back. And to kind of understand, you need to know that in the mid-1800s, you had Charles Darwin that came up with this whole idea about evolution and completely changed the way people thought about society. And a few decades later, his cousin, Galton, Francis Galton, came up with this idea of eugenics. He coined the term, and it meant well-born from the Greek well-born. And he was convinced that we could improve society by improving heredity, by changing who breeds and who breeds with whom, who has kids, what are the good stock, and kind of like how we've thought about cattle or animals for, you know, a long time, we should do the same for humans. And he came up with this idea about positive eugenics, where we get the wealthy and the well-educated and the, quote, good stock to have more kids. And we prevent the bad stock, generally the poor, the people of color, from having more kids. And this was a movement that, again, I cannot overstate how impactful it was for policy and health and medicine and nearly everything 100 years ago. It was everywhere. It was part of our immigration policy. It was part of our reproductive policy. And that's, I hope, just a way to set the stage to let people know that even though we don't talk about it a lot today, doesn't mean that it didn't exist. It existed and it was everywhere.
And it was everywhere in our medical systems, in our government, in our legal system. It was used to effectively deprive rights to groups of people that were deemed undesirable. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was not coincidentally. It was specifically designed, this fake nonsense invented out of thin air that had no true scientific basis, to basically say to black and brown folks and poor white people as well,
for sure,
you are the unwashed, you are the undesirables, and we are going to create systems to basically exile you from mainstream social, economic, religious, medical, and legal systems. That is the design of eugenics. Tell us a little bit about why and how that showed up, if you can just cite a couple of examples of where that showed up, and then we'll get into why the Nazis used it as effectively a blueprint for the Nuremberg laws and racial segregation.
Absolutely. So really in the late 1800s, it started picking up steam. And in the early 1900s, it really kind of came to a head. And it was in medicine, it was in health, it was in policy. One of the kind of earliest pushes by the eugenics movement was to try and restrict immigration. And in the early 1900s, as a lot of people know, a lot of people were coming to the United States from all over the world. You know, we had on Ellis Island, the Statue of Liberty put up. We had in the Lower East Side in New York, we had, you know, massive populations of people from all over the world that were showing up and spreading across the country. And there were concerns that we had too many people and they were lower stock and people were sending their worst, and that we had to do something about it, that we needed fewer of these people from like Southern Italy or these Irish Catholics that were coming in way too high of numbers. We needed to keep them out. And what happened was there was a group largely led by, you know, really wealthy folks in Boston and others that tried to put in place literacy tests or tried to put in place other restrictions through legislative action, through laws that ended up getting into the Supreme Court, that got into the halls of power, into Congress and into the Senate. And the result was two big immigration bills, one in 1917 and then a more restrictive one in 1924 called the Johnson-Reed Act. And what it did is it said, we're going to go back to what the country looked like in 1890, and we are going to restrict the number of people that can come from any country in the world to about 2% of the people that came in at that time. And so this was a way to dramatically slash the number of people coming into the U.S. It set up a quota system. And I'd be remiss to not mention that it was decades before even this that the Chinese Exclusion Act was put into place, after a lot of Chinese migrant laborers helped build the Transcontinental Railroad, to basically stop migration from China for decades, up until World War II. And in the aftermath of the 1924 Johnson-Reed Act that was pushed by eugenicists, we should know that at that time, Calvin Coolidge was in the White House and many other people who had pushed the eugenics movement, including Teddy Roosevelt, many of our early presidents, many of our early leaders.
The Carnegie Institution, the Rockefeller
absolutely.
Foundation.
Rockefeller Foundation. Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of money that went into this. And the Johnson-Reed Act in 1924 slashed immigration, and that stayed in place for 40 years. The other thing, in the other place where the eugenics showed up, was in a lot of the progressive era health policy. So now we hear a lot of talk about food, and we hear a lot of talk about clean water, all of those things that are important now as they were 100 years ago. A lot of people might know that, you know, Kellogg, the guy who created cornflakes, was really big into health and eugenics. And you might hear these small stories, but the really big story was that in the 19-teens and 1920s, a lot of states started putting in place legislation that would allow them to forcibly sterilize primarily women of color or poor women. And this got to a point where the Supreme Court had to weigh in. And in 1927, they discussed a case, this woman, Buck v. Bell. This was a Supreme Court case that was decided and written by the famously progressive Oliver Wendell Holmes. And in the decision, they said three generations of imbeciles is enough, and basically used a public health justification to say the state should be allowed to sterilize people against their will if they have mental illness, if they're feeble-minded. And that's what happened for decades, until the 70s in many places, and even until the early 2000s in places like California. So the big takeaway that I want people to know about this is not that this was just a really big thing in health and reproduction and immigration and economics everywhere. It's that it was huge, and even after we rejected it, we said that the Nazis did this, they learned this from the US. Hitler apparently told Madison Grant, who wrote the 1916 book, basically, you know, outlining the Great Replacement
Theory. The passing
theory,
of the Great Race.
The passing of the
that
Great
is the
Race.
The replacement theory. Yep.
That was the replacement theory. And Hitler apparently said, you know, that book was his, quote, Bible.
His Bible. Yep.
And so in the late 1920s and late 1930s, there was a lot of connection between the U.S. and in Germany. Germany looked to the United States to try to look at how you put in place legislation and laws to forcibly sterilize people, which Germany did, obviously, in the 30s. And so the point is not that this was everywhere or that it was really bad and the Germanys adopted it and we've kind of forgotten about it. It's also that the impact of these policies lasted for a very, very, very long time. For decades when it came to immigration, that was not overturned until Lyndon Johnson in the mid-60s. For decades when it came to reproductive control, particularly for women of color, these have long-term impacts. And so when we talk about the repercussions, you can say, maybe we have an administration in place that's using some of these policies, but we can turn them off when we have a different administration in office. And the reality is that it's not that easy. It's not that easy, and history has shown us that it's not that easy.
It's not that easy. Folks, we're talking with Dr. Craig Spencer. He's a professor of public health history at Brown University. I just want to summarize here. We saw this in immigration policy.
Yeah.
Today, there were headlines. Donald Trump is limiting refugees to the lowest level in like 30 years, 7,500 a year. And guess who they all are? White Afrikaners. Like literally the folks that benefited from a racially based apartheid regime in South Africa. Like that's who we're going to take as refugees. Okay,
great. Well, the other group, to be fair, there's another group that has been targeted for prioritization, and it is members of the German AfD party,
yes,
which is a party that has been accused of that has used neo-Nazi slogans. And this is a party that this administration has buddied up to, has said is being unfairly criticized. And so when I see people post on Twitter or talk about the fact that this administration wants to cut down refugees and that they want to prioritize white South Africans, they call it racism. This is not just racism. This is eugenics in 2025. It is this idea that we can and choose the populations that we want to breed. It's similar to Elon Musk talking about and acting on this desire to increase the number of people. That depopulation, he says, is the greatest civilizational concern. He's not concerned about depopulation in South Africa. If he was, he would be having babies with a bunch of people in South Africa, where he is from, right? What he's doing is he's having a bunch of babies and trying to increase the headcount that is related to him. He's trying to do what Galton told him to do. And this is incredibly problematic.
Incredibly problematic. You hear this in a bunch of these sort of billionaire technocrat oligarchs and this weird intersection of this ethno-nationalistic Christian white-centric plus AI version of the future. I mean, Elon Musk has how many kids? Like 13, 14? We're going to come back with Dr. Craig Spencer and continue to dig into this. Do not go anywhere, everybody. This discussion of modern eugenics in the Trump administration continues on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined right now by Dr. Craig Spencer, a public health historian at Brown University. We're talking about the echoes of the American eugenics movement from the early 19th century into the 20s in the United States, the echoes of that eugenics movement in many, may I say, most of Donald Trump's policies. Remember in Trump 1.0 where he was like, yeah, people from these countries can't come here anymore. That little the attempt at this. Well, that was foiled that time around, but this time around, it is everywhere and in everything. We've got some sound, Dr. Craig, that I wanted you to take a listen to remind our listeners of.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start with Caroline Leavitt was asked a pretty specific question, and usually she's good for a font of sort of nonsense talking points. This time it was a full-out dodge. Let's roll cut 42, Jacob.
Is it the administration's position that hospitals should not have to treat people who come into the emergency department who are not here legally.
No, that's not our position. Our position is that it's completely unacceptable that the Biden administration paroled and encouraged an invasion of tens of millions of illegal aliens into our country and then promised them free health care. And the Democrats are on the record repeatedly stating that they believe illegal aliens should have health care benefits, free health care benefits in the United States of America. So that is a recipe for a disaster. Of course, you're going to encourage a mass illegal invasion of our country, which is exactly what happened. And we've seen the
unfortunate. I can't listen to any more of her garbage. the literally words like invasion.
Yeah.
Were used all the time in the rise of the Nazi regime in Germany, as were very restrictive immigration law. It's literally like so much of Trump's policies today just lockstep with what was done leading up to the rise of the Third Reich in Germany. But I specifically wanted you to address, she keeps talking about Joe Biden. Last time I checked, EMTALA was signed by Ronald Reagan.
Can the you famously progressive Ronald Reagan.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Can you just briefly please explain to people what EMTALA is?
Absolutely.
And why Ronald Reagan signed it?
For sure. So I work as an emergency physician for fun once a week. I've been working as an ER doctor for nearly 20 years. And EMTALA requires me to provide stabilizing care for whomever comes in the emergency department. Now, that may be people who are unbelievably ill and shot or stabbed. It may be people who are delivering a baby. It may be people with whatever condition comes through those doors. That's part of the excitement of my job, is I don't know what's gonna come. But it also means that we can't just like throw people out on the street or deny them care, because we don't want to do that, regardless of whether you are from a different country and don't have the right papers, or regardless of whether you're from this country and don't have the right insurance papers. And so for decades, this has been the law of the land, because this was incredibly problematic. Decades ago, politicians, including Ronald Reagan, realized that we needed to be able to at least provide stabilizing care when people showed up to a hospital. That does not mean we give free health care for all. It does not mean there's a Medicare for all system. It does not even mean that undocumented immigrants here in the U.S. are able to access programs like Medicaid, for the most part, or Medicare, or many of the other programs that the administration is saying they are taking resources away from. Now, what does that mean today, particularly in light of this eugenics argument? When we talk about an invasion, when we talk about people as undeserving of care, we are starting the process of dehumanizing them. We are saying that, and this was really the straw that broke my own back here. We shouldn't be having this conversation about whether or not in the emergency department, I should have to provide life-saving care to someone on their deathbed because they may or may not be an undocumented immigrant. One, it's not going to matter. I don't care what anyone tells me. I'm going to provide care because that's what my job is as a physician. Two, the practicalities of that are impossible. I, as an ER doctor, don't ask about people's insurance status. I don't ask about their documentation status. I'm sure at some other place somebody does, but for me, that is not important, and that does nothing to change the care that I'm going to give. We've all agreed on that as a country. And I think lastly, there's just like no way to reliably do that without stigmatizing and without causing a lot of issues and without impacting the care of other people. So the fact that this administration was not able to just say, you know what, let ER doctors do what they think they need to do, but we should not be providing whatever care you want to talk about upstream. If you want to say you don't want to provide, you know, preventative colonoscopies to a certain population, that's a different conversation. But when we're talking about life-saving, stabilizing care, it's not only the law of the land, but it's the humane thing to do as a physician. And I tie this back to this larger argument we're seeing by much of the administration that, you know, there are people coming to this country that have bad genes, and that it's their genes that are the problem.
Dr. Craig's going to stick around with me into this next segment, so we're going to continue this conversation. But to these points precisely, this is J.D. Vance saying the eugenics part out loud. Let's take cut 95.
About illegal alien benefits. Look, the text is very clear. And I even saw, I think it was George Stephanopoulos, in an interview with Mike Johnson, did a fact check that was totally rooted in baseless claims. It was basically Democrat propaganda. If you look at the legislative text that they gave us, they tried to turn on two separate provisions that would give health care benefits to illegal aliens. Number one, if you're an American citizen, you've been to a hospital in the last few years, you probably noticed that wait times are especially large, and very often somebody who's there in the emergency room waiting is an illegal alien, very often a person who can't even speak English. Why do those people get health care benefits at hospitals paid for by American citizens? The answer is a decision made by the Biden administration that the Trump administration, working with congressional Republicans,
This is all lies and eugenics, and I can barely stomach it. Your reaction to what Mr. Vance had to say. We're gonna take care of some messages. We're gonna come back on the other side with Dr. Spencer. Jacob's waving at me. Maggie, we got some business to attend to. So we're gonna do that. We'll listen to more of the sound. And we will be rejoined by Dr. Spencer on the other side. We continue this conversation. It's uncomfortable, and that's why we got to talk about it. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I am very happy that Dr. Craig Spencer, a professor of public health history at Brown University and an ER physician, who has battled on the COVID front lines as well as the Ebola outbreak in New York City back in the 2010s-ish, 2014-ish. Thank you for that work on behalf of all of us. we're talking about the echoes. I don't even know if I can call them echoes. the explicit rhetoric of eugenics that runs through every corner of Project 2025 and therefore, of course, Donald Trump's second administration. Before the break, we were listening to some sound of J.D. Vance basically say, why the hell are they all these non-English speaking illegals in our emergency rooms? This is terrible. What does that mean? If you don't speak English, you don't deserve life-saving emergency medical treatment, even though the law that Ronald Reagan signed, EMTALA, requires it. I just wanted to play some other sound that if folks care to spend 30 seconds using an internet web browser, shows Donald Trump deploying the language of Nazism, of eugenics, repeatedly. It is, in fact, how he began his initial campaign to become president back in 2016. Well, let's take a listen to Cut 34.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Then, of course, this infamous moment from his only debate with Vice President Kamala Harris, Cut 46.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
And this, which is explicitly Nazi propaganda about poisoning the blood of America. Take a listen.
They're poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done. They poison mental institutions and prisons all over the world, not just in South America, not just the three or four countries that we think about, but all over the world. They're coming into our country from Africa, from Asia, all over the world. They're pouring into our country.
Again, Donald Trump limiting refugees to the lowest number in decades, 7,500 a year, and specifically, explicitly preferencing white Afrikaners. And as Dr. Spencer pointed out earlier this hour, the AFD party members, which is a neo-Nazi far, far, far right party that, by the way, Elon Musk spoke at. More on big data and artificial intelligence in a moment, folks. But Craig, we were talking in the break. I've got one of my texters on the line saying, this is a conspiracy theory. You're petty. This is a joke. This is all BS. And then, of course, calling me an angry woman. You know, nothing like a little cherry of misogyny on top of this xenophobic, racist logic here. Can you give us some more granularity on this? Why this simply cannot be brushed aside, and really, although uncomfortable, although it may require people to analyze and question some of their own presumptions about Donald Trump serving their interests or reflecting their values. Help us drill down here.
Sure. Let me just give you one example. So a couple of weeks ago, the CDC changed a lot of its websites and it pulled down a lot of websites on identity, health equity, other topics. And CNBC tweeted about it. And the current director, Jim O'Neill of the CDC, quote tweeted this and said, "We are off to a good start." And what he was quote tweeting was a CNBC story with screenshots showing a CDC webpage talking about people with disabilities, and then another CDC webpage saying the page you're looking for was not found. The current CDC director is flouting and happily celebratory, talking about we're off to a good start, that the CDC is erasing the work it does on people with disabilities. I have been reluctant to talk about eugenics and tie it so directly with this administration, because whenever you talk about eugenics and Nazism, like, nothing was as bad as Nazism. So it's always hard, and we seem like angry people when we do that. But I don't know how much clearer you can get than the director of the CDC gleefully celebrating that we're getting rid of research on people with disabilities. This is just like a this is intentional, right? This is not a mistake. This is very, very intentional. When you listen to Elon Musk, when you listen to RFK Jr. talk about how declining fertility in this country is the greatest risk to civilization, if you talk to Elon Musk, if you hear RFK Jr. just a few days ago talking about declining fertility as a national security crisis, do you think either of those men want the increase in population to be in communities of color? Do you think that they want them to be among poorer people? Again, no. The pronatalism community in this country, this idea that we need to have more and more people, more and more children, is built around this idea that we need more and more white children. We are building the institutions to make it possible for there to be more and more of the children that we, as in the people in power, this administration, want. And if you look back 100 years ago, I have this paper on eugenics that was read before the American Public Health Association. And it talked about how the white population basically needs to pick up the steam and get going on reproducing. Otherwise, we are going to be replaced. That is what RFK Jr. is talking about when he's talking about this being a national security crisis. I assure you that this administration has made it clear over and over again that who they want to repopulate are the people that look like them, that think like them, that act like them, that are part of kind of their social class. And I don't know how much clearer it can get than that. Now, maybe you don't want to call Donald Trump a eugenicist because it seems like too far. There are many episodes, many, many well-documented episodes of him as far back, decades ago, talking on the Oprah Winfrey Show, using this idea about good genes and bad genes, about
yes,
people being a racehorse.
Good genes and bad. Go Google it, Mark from Sussex. Donald Trump, Oprah, good genes, bad genes, and sit and listen to it. Trump himself has been extremely personally obsessed with this idea, which I think people are a little bit surprised about the protonatalism, right? Mm-hmm. But it has always been there. It used to be relegated to the outer fringes of the conservative movement. It is now one of their foundational
front
pillars,
center.
Right? And it works in lockstep with what I'm going to call this regressive reach back, right? When he's even the logo, Make America Great Again. I don't think it was really great in the 50s and 60s for black folks, right, in this country, or women that aspired to work outside of the home. But the what I'm going to call the return to these regressive gender ideals, the trad wife, right? Mm-hmm. That is, they're not going to want to pay women that are not white and upper middle class to stay home and raise kids. That's not who they're concerned about being a trad wife. So this, all of this stuff lines up in this very clear way. If people can take off the horse blinders, right, and the rose-colored glasses, and really grapple with both the complexity of our own history and how it is impacting the rhetoric and the policy. I wouldn't be as freaked out if it was just sort of this political rhetoric that was getting used to try to, you know, call on people's most debased instincts, right? But it is their active everyday policy driver that this is showing. It's why they also don't mind killing SNAP benefits, right? Yeah. It's also why they don't care about Americans that require to get their health insurance through the ACA. Those aren't the people that they're interested in helping out, because they're also not concerned with poor or working poor white Americans. Those are also undesirables.
If you go back to even the first couple of weeks of this administration, which feels like forever ago, you may recall the controversy around one of the young Doge staffers who was fired because he put on a bunch of posts on social media. And one was basically him saying, I'm a eugenicist, and I basically want and he was fired. And then J.D. Vance and Elon Musk both like very, very vociferously demanded that he get put back to work. And he was rehired. Yep. And so at that point I was thinking, oh, when they say make America great again, this was a tagline that was used decades ago by Reagan. It was used 100 years ago in a similar sense. This is not new. When you talk about what you want America to be great again as and what that looks like, I think that it is 100 years ago. I think it is a point at which we close the doors to people that we deem undesirable. And today it may be people that are not white Afrikaners. But remember, history should teach us some things. 100 years ago, the people that were undesirable in this country were Irish Catholics. They were Southern Italians. They were not considered white the way that we consider them today. So think about the shifting ideologies and what this looks like, and how you may presume that you are immune from the impacts of these policies now, but that is not always going to be the case.
Yeah, it is. It is disturbing, to say the very least. And we owe it to ourselves to try to, again, grapple with these things directly, to not literally whitewash our history and ignore this, or to ignore the rhetoric of eugenics and the policies of eugenics that are being played out every day by this administration. I mean, need we point out, and one of my texters, thank you very much, Steve from Milwaukee, saying, yes, the mass deportations, the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh is like, it's fine if you racially profile people. Don't worry about it. Just go ahead and do that. That is a version of eugenics, saying these are the people that we want out and you will define them by their race, not actually by a vigorous evidence-based review of their immigration status and whether or not they've committed a crime. Just solely detaining and disappearing people based on their race. It is dangerous. It has snagged upwards of, I believe the reporting from ProPublica, upwards of 140 American citizens. And that's just what they could find out. Imagine what isn't in the records.
And to be reminded, in the aftermath of the Immigration Act 100 years ago, nearly 2 million Mexican Americans were deported from the U.S., including hundreds of thousands of American citizens. And so if one were to look at the past, you could say, I know what the future is going to bring, because again, we've done this before. We should have an idea of what the immediate future looks like, because we understand what the distant past looks like.
Yet Trump derangement syndrome, which gets tossed around to talk about people that want to point these things out, the derangement comes from those who can't see what is plainly in front of their face because it is uncomfortable and requires an analysis, a self-reflection, a looking in the mirror at yourself and what values are you actually standing behind in these moments. A couple of resources for everyone. Heinrich Krieger, who studied at the University of Arkansas, explicitly analyzed the American legal system and its ties to eugenics. Historian James Q. Whitman published a book called Hitler's American Model in 2017. Read it. Stack it up against the policies of the Trump administration. It is out there for the reading. And Dr. Craig Spencer, my incredible guest for most of this hour, you just had a piece come out in The Atlantic, sir. Yep. We will post that and share that. You can read in detail Dr. Craig's analysis. I hope you don't mind me calling you Dr. Craig, Dr. Spencer.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you can call me Craig, absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
Will you please come back very soon? And I want to talk to you about public health, what it is, how it's evolved, about the social determinants of health.
Absolutely.
And how a high tide in public health raises all boats indisputably, always. It matters to each and every one of us. Thank you, Dr. Craig Spencer of Brown University.
Thank you. I'd love to come back. Thanks, Maggie.
Folks, stay tuned. I share some closing thoughts on this very distressing topic next on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We just concluded a discussion with Dr. Craig Spencer of Brown University. He's an ER physician, fought on the front lines of the COVID pandemic, also fought Ebola, contracted it himself in New York City back in 2014. He has spoken out publicly that Donald Trump's policies in almost every element of his administration are explicitly eugenic, that it is about establishing racial hierarchies, which ultimately, remember, also means that poor white folk don't count either, that working class white folk are simply a tool for the acquisition of additional political power and wealth for the elites in this country. That's who they want reproducing. Not working class white people, certainly not black and brown folks. I wanted to share with you to close out today's show some writings, some reflections on this topic by Julian Vasquez Hellig. He is a nationally recognized policy scholar, public intellectual, and civil rights activist. He has testified before the U.S. Congress, the United Nations, and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. I'm going to read what he's written about this administration's explicitly racist and classist policies of eugenics. The roots of Nazi ideology were nourished by the same soil here in America that produced the Trail of Tears, the Chinese Exclusion Act, and the Tuskegee Experiment. What the Nazis did was to amplify America's own racial logic to its most monstrous conclusion. So when Americans invoke Nazi Germany as the ultimate evil, we often treat it as something alien to our national character. But this moral distance is a luxury built on forgetting our own history. Jim Crow segregation, the genocide of indigenous nations, and the exclusion of entire immigrant groups were not historical footnotes. They were the scaffolding upon which Hitler built his Reich. The lesson here is not that America is Nazi Germany, but that the structures of racial domination developed here set historical precedents that others copied. The original Antifa, folks, was the U.S. government itself in World War II. We were the anti-fascists. We were the liberators of the world from Nazi fascism. And yet, many here who condemned Hitler were avid segregationists, who advocating for maintaining apartheid in America for as long as possible. Black soldiers who fought fascism on behalf of the United States returned to find themselves banned from voting and housing and education by the very nation that they had defended. The federal government that had dismantled concentration camps was still running Native American boarding schools into the 1970s. This dissonance of us condemning racism abroad or denying its existence here while actively practicing it remains one of the greatest contradictions of American identity. And it explains why fascism in U.S. culture so often sounds like projection. We see in others what we refuse to acknowledge in ourselves. Recognizing this lineage doesn't diminish the horrors of the Holocaust, of course not, but it reveals how genocidal systems grow out of ordinary institutions, laws, schools, hospitals, police, and bureaucracies that appear neutral until they are not. It shows how the language of efficiency, of purity and protection can become the machinery of exclusion and extermination. When people insist it doesn't happen here, it can't happen here, history replies, it already did. Others took notes, and it is happening again today. If the past century has taught us anything, it is that ideas migrate easily across borders, ideologies, and generations. America exported both democracy and racism, both freedom and fascist technique. Which legacy we choose to nurture now depends on whether we are willing to see ourselves clearly in history's mirror. And this isn't about guilt, it is about responsibility. The same nation whose laws helped shape the Nuremberg Codes also gave birth to the Civil Rights Movement, the Voting Rights Act, and the enduring belief that moral courage and clarity can bend the arc of history. We are heirs of both awakenings and atrocities, and facing that dual inheritance honestly is not self-hatred. It is the first step towards redemption. Denial keeps us trapped, but recognition opens the door to repair. The truth is that history, of course, does not repeat itself. It rhymes and reverberates. The forces that created Jim Crow, Native American boarding schools, and eugenic laws are not relics. They are patterns that are reemerging whenever fear triumphs over empathy. The antidote is not denialism. It is vigilance. Education that names injustice, leadership that prioritizes truth over comfort, and citizenship that refuses to mistake silence for civility. We must confront the uncomfortable continuity. Our history is inspiring the politics of today. Scholars and activists have traced how the American settler colonial project, rooted in displacement, broken treaties, and the myth of manifest destiny, continues to echo in our politics here and globally. Lineage is not destiny. The same ingenuity that built systems of domination can dismantle them. The same bureaucracies that once enforced racial hierarchy can guarantee human dignity. The same nation that exported exclusion, we can now model repair. Reckoning with our history is not an act of despair. It is an act of reclamation. We reclaim the moral potential buried under centuries of denial and cloaking of inequity. We reclaim the possibility that the descendants of the racially oppressed can become the architects of justice. Doing so is the truest form of patriotism. I'm going to leave it there. I'll be back with y'all tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.